Hey, this is Gareth Webb, and you are listening to Breakout, a show aimed at cutting through the hiring noise and breaking down best practices. We'll also be tapping into the minds of other industry leaders so you can ensure your business makes the right critical hires the right way.
Good morning, Christoph. How are you?
Thanks.
Very good. Yeah. So I'll do a brief intro. We met through another podcast guest from Invisible Technologies, who I understand you guys partner with. You are one of two co-founders for Rotorio. Do you want to give us a sort of elevator pitch, brief introduction on Rotorio and like what your proposition is and kind of what you guys are here to do?
Sure. Yeah. Happy to do that. So, my name is Christoph from Rotorio for the listeners out there. What we do is, or why we are here out in this world is, that the whole company has actually started, with the idea in mind to help people, who are, I would say, non-experts in the, industrial organizational psychology realm, to deliver them insights from that area, driven by the fact that my co-founder and I, we've both been PhD students in that field. And while you're doing a PhD, you read a lot of papers. There's so much empirical insights which are already gathered through research with organizations, with real people. And we found it quite difficult to bring that outside of the academia world, because usually if you ask a researcher or academic, can you give me a tip? Then or like some hints, then it's usually, a lot of ifs. It's like, yeah, it depends on this, or yeah, if that's the case and so on. So they have a really hard time to give concrete answers to questions. We thought it might be nice to have something out there that helps people, based on those insights. So that's how we started. And we have created our platform, which is helping companies to transform their company cultures by applying those insights paired with artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence is our enabler. And the way we do it is, and that's pretty novel, is that we are understanding people's behavior in certain situations, and we put that in the context of the business needs. So to make it more concrete, for example, if you want to train people and say, okay, we have to change our company culture in a certain direction, and we want to become more customer-centric, for example, how are you going to do that as an organization? You can use our technology. You can give those people a way to train and shift their thoughts in this direction by letting them go through virtual role plays. So that's a concrete how we do it. And the same principle could be also applied in recruiting, right? If you want to find out, okay, what kind of values are bringing those people into your company? Are they the right people for the job role? Do they have the right skills? You could apply the same principles also recruiting.
So you are for clarity for everybody, you're a pre-hire tool for, like, say, selection and understanding who you're vetting, essentially, and you're a post-hire kind of like coaching, behavioral analysis type product for once people are in the business, or taking people that have been there for a long period of time and trying to understand more scientifically the DNA of the culture beyond just the subjective.
Exactly. Yeah, that describes it very well. So we're going beyond what's written on a web page, which might be like some nice catchy phrases on that. That's how I
yeah, corporate jargon.
Yeah, and what we are looking at is really the behavior that the people bring to the table, and measuring that behavior and then putting it into comparison to what's needed for the company.
Okay, so if I put my sort of hiring, recruiting, search hat on, go one step back, what led you down the PhD path of studying this subject matter of, how organizations work and how behaviors affect organizations? Like what kind of was the pre-step to that decision and going into that sort of field and depth of study?
Yeah, first of all, our core focus is always like, or my core focus was like human behavior in general, like how do humans behave? And it's quite interesting. And then you can apply that, or like you could say, okay, I'm interested in how humans behave, like in a consumer context, which was also part of what I'm interested in. But there's also, okay, how do humans behave in organizations with other humans, interacting with other people? And that was quite interesting and fascinating, because obviously there are some elements to it which might be universal or unique. And that's again the person itself, like our behavior ourselves, like that's something that is very fascinating. And then you can try to understand it and how people make decisions in certain situations, right? And there was like in economics, there's this whole thing about behavioral economics and like how the assumption that people always behave rationally and so on. I think that has all been challenged and already very well examined. And the same is obviously true also in the workplace, that people don't behave rationally, there are other people involved and so on. And yeah, that was quite interesting to say, okay, how do those individuals themselves, like how they act, but then also how can you create kind of the environment that people can actually flourish because they bring something to the table. And the question is like, how can you align what their skills, like what they bring to the table with what the organization has to offer? Like what's the best way to map that in order to unleash or like, and like, yeah, have the best onset of their capabilities actually in an organization.
Yeah. On a slight side note, so you talk about people behaving rationally or irrationally. Have you read Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely? Have you read that book?
To be honest, I haven't read the book in detail. I think I have read most of the studies that are probably incorporated in that book. But
right. Yeah, somebody. So I was working in financial services and like markets for a period of 4 or 5 years, and somebody recommended that book to me. And it was quite life changing because it talks about like everyone thinks everybody's incredibly rational, but it's often quite the opposite of like how decisions get made and herd mentality. And the last 2 years have probably been a very good example of that in terms of like fear and greed, like 2020 mass fear, 2021 mass greed. And now we're sort of dealing with the after effects of that. Interesting. Yeah, I think, you know, applying human intelligence and the mechanics behind that and the psychology behind that, it is something we deal with all the time with our clients when they're trying to find the most capable or high potential people to be in a very narrow functional job in the very peak of an industry or peak of their career. You know, like we're dealing with, you know, very, very intelligent people in very commercially stressful environments, in very ambiguous conditions, like lots of change, lots of uncertainty. So yeah, trying to get to the source of truth as to really what they're driven by and how they make decisions is very, very important. And so one of the reasons I was quite captivated by your product is sort of plugs in with certain parts of what we're trying to build, which is like really ascertaining strengths and traits to match to a position or an environment or a team so that teams can flourish more effectively. So what I want to do is just like, how do you define the whole part of your product is like, you know, you said you're using gathering insights from behavioral analysis or behavioral intelligence and using AI to do that. How are you defining behavioral intelligence and like, why is that important?
Maybe what's very important is that the different ways on capturing behavior and capturing people call like personality and the different ways on to look to look at personality themselves. And most people, they would assume that, or the easiest connection is to say with your inner thoughts, feelings, and so on. So what is really driving us, which would be this concept of traits. And then if you talk about it, people would probably assume that you can really look at their inner feelings, right? To say, oh, they know what I like, they know what I prefer, and so on. And that's actually what we are not focusing on, and because that's probably very hard to do. And there are other concepts which also represent your personality and they can be used as a source of information for other people. And this could be something, for example, how you adapt to new situations. And that's something where what you can also observe from the outside, right? As I mentioned before, we are using this kind of video simulations, trying, for example, to understand how do people adapt to new situations if you put them there. And then it's something you can observe. And based on those observations, you can determine profiles and say, okay, you've shown them different situations. You have captured them in different situations and observed them. And that's something that humans can do, because other humans can also not look behind the curtain and say like, okay, that's your inner self, but they can see how you react and what you do. And that's something what technology can do as well. And that's actually what we are doing. So the behavioral intelligence in a way is understanding your behavior in different contexts and mapping it according to very well established taxonomies, for example. So that it's not just random how we cluster it later on. And why is that important is, for example, can give a practical example is, it might be the way of saying, okay, maybe you're feeling guilty by missing deadlines. And that's something obviously that technology cannot capture, like how you're feeling. But right. If you're doing a change in a changing behavior, then it's also irrelevant. Like, yeah, that might be nice that you feel that way. But if you don't behave differently, then it doesn't matter in a working context. And that's exactly what we want to measure or capture, is like, what's the behavior that you're doing? Because there's also clearly research on that what you do and the behavioral part is even more important than the feeling part, which in turn can also not be measured by technology. And that's a good thing. We are focusing on something that can actually not be detected, because then we would have to spy on your inner feelings, which is not possible. But it's also irrelevant, because it doesn't matter in the workplace context itself. And that's something.
Yeah, no point feeling guilty and then not doing the work anyway. Like the guilt has to create tension that gets released by action. So do you try to measure the action? So you're measuring, and you can go into some detail here, but you're measuring physical, visual, and audio traits that you can convert to data points that basically give like the scale of where that your big personality types lie. Is that fair? So like eye movement, body language, tone of voice, pauses, hesitance, or does it go deeper than that?
No, those are the expert aspects we can measure. Also, we can measure language and so on. So we have all those different aspects that humans can also derive, like from observing other humans. And that's something we can observe, because that's something that, yeah, that also makes sense to observe, because it can be used as a cue. And we're putting that together. And as you said, we are clustering that data, and it's okay. Humans who are usually, or like people who usually behave in that way, they're more seen as X, Y. So that's also kind of a way that personality itself is not, there's no clear final scale, right? It's all psychometrics in a way, or like all created artificially, if you want. I mean, there's a theory behind it and everything, but the concept itself is very hard. It's like different than measuring your pulse, right? So that's something different. And the importance here that it's also probabilistic, so it's not deterministic, even though you would argue it's very stable over time. But of course, there can be situations where people, and that's probably also most of, can happen a lot, is that people, you know, can show different behavior, and that's why we capture it in different situations to make sure, okay, that's the most average behavior people would show, and then clustering on top of that the profile.
Okay, so can you just walk us through some of the simplistic points around the personality types for people that don't know what that is, or they are rather?
Yeah, so what we can do, or what we also focus on, so we have multiple models, but the one that's clearly the most dominating one, most interesting one is the Big Five model or Ocean model. It's probably not exclusive, but it's the best researched one out there, which says, okay, people's behavior can be mapped along five different traits in a way, or five different personality traits. Which are usually used as OCEAN acronyms. So the first one is openness, which reflects, for example, people's tendency to engage with new things, you know, like they get stimulated by abstract ideas, for example. Then there's another one, which is called consensusness, consensusness that's achievements driving, like people who are very industrious. And the other one is agreeableness. I think it's almost self-explanatory. It's mostly, are people agreeable? Like, do they like to collaborate? It's mostly used for incorporation settings, or like that, people are very cooperative. The next one is extroversion, like people who get their motivation by being in a larger group, by showing energy, being energetic. And the last one is neuroticism, or the opposite is emotional stability, which is about people who are also emotionally stable or very susceptible to screen their environment for things that might be threatening, for example, or very dangerous, such as social exclusion, for example. So those are the five factors. That's why it's also called five factor model as well. And that's one of the basis of our technology, because the good thing is that this taxonomy has been very well researched with other taxonomies in the industrial and organizational psychology.
For those that are listening and don't really know what you mean by the word taxonomy, how are you defining, how are you applying that terminology? What do you mean by that? How are you using the word taxonomy? Because I think some people maybe over here in the US as well, like won't understand like the full meaning.
Yeah, it's usually clustering, like, I would say, concepts into our larger realm that describing the different subparts, which is again a little bit abstract. But usually you have maybe like the thing is you have different concepts out there maybe for describing something. And a taxonomy is actually giving it kind of a structure behind it,
and that
makes it very graspable, because some people might talk about the same, but they have a different concept in their head, and this taxonomy is making clear they're all talking about the same thing in a way. Then.
Right. Yeah. Removing the abstraction potentially from it. Okay. And so with the personality types, like, what's the importance for like understanding these personality types when people are hiring?
That's a very good question. So the first thing is, of course, that you have something that is very standardized, which is very important. So you have a clear way on how to structure or what to look at. And the good thing is that with those types, actually, or like in this construct, as mentioned a little bit before, there's a lot of research on them, on how they are tied to other aspects in the workplace. And that's, for example, on the job role. Like, there is a lot of research on how people are more satisfied or can more unfold their capabilities depending on the job context itself. So usually a person is not hired into an empty room in the organization. So there's usually a job role and there's an organizational culture to it. And the good thing is that those correlate with each other, like the job role itself, like what are the certain tasks that the person has to do. And it's less about the hard facts in that job role. It's mostly about, for example, is there social interaction? Like, does this person has to interact with other people outside of the workplace? And that's usually the case in sales or service job roles. The other part is that it's also related to the company culture. So certain people feel more or less comfortable in certain company organizational cultures. And the question one can ask now on the other side is, so you have two things you can do now. So either you try to change the individual, or you can also try to adapt a little bit the organization to that individual needs, which is important because there will never be 100% overlap. And the point is, where this is important is to see, okay, where are the gaps are. And what can you do as an organization, for example, to cater to those gaps and make sure that the person gets motivated in that workplace later on. and not being demotivated because maybe you have structured the role in a way that it's not very motivating, or maybe the position the person is even suited to a better position, maybe even in the same job function, right? If you think about sales is, there's so many different roles within sales. So if that person wants to work in that job position, you can say, okay, maybe you might be more motivated in being an SDR other than, or I don't know, a key account or something like that.
Yeah. So what have you seen, for example, take that example, right? Where it's like, say, more of an aggressive outbound sales versus more of an account management sales. Like, it's quite easy to sort of make some assumptions around why one might be better at the other, but it's not always the case, I've found. What is that, like, what kinds of personality trait shifts would you say exist there based on what you've learned so far, what you've found, or maybe another, like an extreme, it's a good example because you're talking about the same organization, right? Customer-centric organization doing the job of closing deals or producing revenue. So it's better to do that because there's nuances versus, say, a software engineer versus a salesperson. Like, we all know the differences pretty quickly. But within the nuanced sales environment where the function or the output is quite similar, or the tasks are quite similar, like talking to customers, phoning, demos, you know, proposals, where might there be the nuanced personality trait shift based on what you've learned?
I mean, the shift would be in a way that could be right to say, okay, it's the culture is something you cannot change, maybe. Like that's more the solid part of an organization. It's pretty hard to change the corporate culture. So one thing obviously is to say, okay, I said what you can do is you can look at the job task itself, and where it comes to what we have learned in a motivational part is that in some occasions there are people who are very agreeable, and there's always this old kind of, I think, like farmer hunter kind of thing that especially in sales is pretty dominant. But I think what it really represents are mostly these nuances on the agreeableness extroversion scale. That's probably the correlation,
right,
part to the big five.
Yeah.
And of course, what you can see here is that it makes sense for keeping a relationship. It's always good to be a little bit more agreeable, because then it's more about having this kind of collaboration style. And if you want to be, as you said, a little bit more aggressive or a little bit more pushy, it makes sense to have somebody who's very a little bit more extroverted, not reluctant to, you know, like.
So like, less agreeable, more extrovert.
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, this is interesting because obviously doing this internally without Scout and our business, and we look at the team, and we're not a huge team, but we want to grow. And it's like, right, we look at this. We have, I'm basically a salesperson. I go out and find customers and I overcome objections, or I'm probably less agreeable, but I would say I can be quite extrovert if I need to be. But then other times, this is where it gets confusing to me, because other times I really don't want to be dealing and socializing and talking to people because I have like deep work to do. And so there is always this internal continuum. But I'd say for the most part, like, I perform well in an extrovert environment, and I can be less agreeable if I need to be, if I believe I'm right, or if I'm happy to like go into some conflict. I'm not scared of conflict. We've got other people in the team who do not like conflict, and they are far more agreeable, and they are potentially more introvert, but they do a very good job of like managing a relationship through and obviously, if we had to have customer success or account managers, like you said, you want reasonably extrovert folks, I'd imagine, who are quite agreeable to make like bond and, you know, keep good relationships. And once you have the customer, then you need to keep the customer. So I think this is interesting. And we don't see many companies doing this kind of assessment. Some companies will do personality or like psychometric tests, but they're probably in the minority because everybody's hurrying and everybody's so quick to hire and make some assumptions on resume or where they worked. So we try to advise people against that. And so like, yeah, how are you positioning, how are you educating customers on the benefits of this? That's kind of one of the things I'm really interested in.
Yeah, the first thing is that people get aware of how to structure also like their positions or think about what is actually constituting like their organizational culture and the job role itself. So it's more like a backward engineering way to say, okay, what do you actually have, what you are looking for, and how would you structure that? Because the job ad itself, I think, is not the right way to do it. It's like, okay, this is like more like as an attracting piece for getting people applying for the job role. And the point mm-hmm. here is that also the job role is, or I have not seen any technology out there which is that the job ad in a way is adapting. I mean, you might have different job ads, different versions, but the ad itself is not adapting. So you're getting a lot of different people and you're hoping that this ad is like fitting to the ones you need. And then like having this kind of systematic way of thinking how to structure it. And as I said before, not about what kind of technology are they using, if it's a development role or so on and so forth. It's more about, as I said before, there are other taxonomies out there to structure a job role. As I said, is the person working alone? Is there a lot of supervision? Is it always the same? Is there a lot of like each day is different and so on? So you can define the role itself with those along those concepts. And the same could be true for the organizational culture. And then once people getting aware of, okay, this is actually, and the interesting thing is like, is it even true what you're thinking that your culture is? So that's another thing to say, okay, we put on those fancy phrases on our webpage, but was actually the lived culture in that company? That's still.
This is like, a classic thing about mis-selling, right? It's like selling a role in a company to attract an audience, and then everybody then interviews that person very differently. And I've had this before where you have interviewing team sit down and describe the candidate, and it sounds like five different people that are being described. It's the same person in the same room, or now it's like not even that, right? We're on Zoom and everyone, you find lots of examples, and we get it with our clients where the debrief across four executives are hiring another person, and you almost don't understand how they've all got such vastly different feedback and assessment of a person and their traits and their strengths and weaknesses. So obviously that's not been uniformly described at the very beginning, and the assessment criteria has not been agreed upon and things like that. You just said something that I want to go into a bit of depth, because this was discussed when we talked to Invisible as well, around the internal and the external perception of personality traits. Like, I think I am a certain way, but I know what everyone else thinks I am. People tend to tell me. And the same with company culture. Like, companies think their culture is a certain way, but it's not always felt that way by the employees and the staff. So can you describe the differences there between like the internal or perceived versus like the external and like the actual traits?
Yeah, so they all try, or at least also when it comes down to the big five, they try to capture the same concept of how personality, as I said, is seen as a taxonomy with all those different concepts behind. But they look at it from different angles. That's how you could see it. And the I said, like from the inner perspective, that's mostly kind of where most of the research has been done on, is like you give people a questionnaire with self-reports and they fill it out. And the thing is that there are things that could affect how they fill it out, not even if they apply for a job, but also in general. And that could be, for example, their own image. Like, again, how I would like to be seen. Like, that's like, oh, maybe, that's my self-image in a way, where I want to be, like how I want to like to be seen by other people, or like what society thinks of me, what is preferable. And that would be falling onto this social desirability to say, okay, it's desirable to be in that way, because people are, and that's another thing I want to touch upon a little bit, because you asked that before, how we educate people. It's not always more is better, but that's also not the case. Like, all extremes are not good, as always. And there have been studies on that. It's actually kind of they call it an inverted U function. Like, on extroversion, if salespeople are too extroverted, then they're mostly talking and talking about themselves, but they're not listening anymore for the problems of our customers. So they are like pros and cons with very extreme.
Just thinking back to all the people I've worked with over the years. Yeah, but, and it's like over assumption that, oh, they're really outward and chatty and extrovert, they're going to be great. And it's like, no, that's not.
It's with two creative people, right? Creativity is the same. If people are too creative, they like get lost in their thoughts and nothing gets done. But yeah, they were creative. So they're like that's also interesting to say. Yeah, people are usually rushing for the more is better, but that's actually not always the case. But coming back to the question about the inner and outer view. So I said we like technology cannot get into like under the skin and like really. What are your inner feelings and thoughts? And that is all mostly the result then what you would get if you look at questionnaires that you give people and they fill it out. And we're looking, what we're doing is like, I said, the outer view, this kind of literature, they call it reputational part. And that's like the shown behavior, how you behave, what you bring to the table. And that's also a reflection in a way, right? Of your personality, because those actions define in the way, and they might be not as highly correlated what you would fill out in a questionnaire, but in the end they also reflect your personality in a way. And the question that is even answered in research is that both are there and both are real, like the self-rated questionnaire and the outer view, and both look at the same concept but from different views. And now the question is, what is more important? What is more important in the workplace, and what's more important when it comes to performance or like how people later on do in their job is actually the outer view. I think there's another better example is like, if you think you're extroverted and in a way, but you don't show it, then it also doesn't matter. Like you wouldn't approach anyone, but if you think you are and you're working in sales, then it doesn't matter because in the end you have to talk to people. And if you still believe you are that and you put your self-ratings high, but you don't show that behavior, then it all doesn't matter in a way. And that's where like the outer view is actually or has been shown to be more relevant, which totally makes sense even from I would say like anecdotal evidence, right?
It's so fascinating because we've got people in our business and I've worked with people in before and I myself have to talk to people. Like, is it the definition of like being really introvert is that you can have contact with people, but it drains you more, your energy. And then if you're extrovert, you need it for your energy. And,
exactly.
So there's this scale, right? And as you said, people latch onto the extremes. And I think that's where your product for me is super interesting because in hiring, especially, I want to move from hiring to coaching in a second, but the hiring piece, is fascinating because like so many, everyone wants to put everybody in a box. Like, oh, that person's an engineer, so they're an introvert. That person's a salesperson, so they're an extrovert. But there's these distribution curves of everything, right? And it's like, how flat or steep is that? Where does a person go on the curve? So you're trying to show people the blend and where people are at on the continuum based on the external viewpoint. Or the things you can measure in short.
Yeah, it's more continuum. As you said, it's not that we want to put people in a box and that makes it a little bit also challenging because like humans are programmed to think in categories.
Yeah.
For reasons to make faster and like decisions. And what we show is actually a continuum, as you said, to say, okay, it's more nuanced. It's not like this is type A or type B. And then you have it on five different scales. So that makes it a little complex because we cannot clearly say this is exactly person X. And what technology can do, and that's a good part, is it can all calculate that up. So at the end, there can be kind of an overlap to certain, those other taxonomies that we use for example, to classify job roles and so on. So that's something that is very, very good to do, and then people can see, okay, what is actually also on the continuum. And as said, the continuum in a way is there's no final end, and of course we have trained our technology with a lot of people and making sure that we cover the largest variety possible out there in comparison to other people, because AI in a way is also probabilistic. So say, okay, you as you said, you can still be like introverted and have extroverted moments, but they might not be motivating for you in a way. So we're not saying you cannot jump on that scale because that's always possible. It's just less likely that you would show that behavior, and it's less likely that it will motivate you. It has also been shown that people who are more likely or more, I would say, on, if you take a normal distribution, or more on maybe, I said it's not linear, so, but then at a certain point, then it's more likely that they will do better in their job because they're motivated. They would like, they're liking doing it. And that's how we put everything together in a large software and environment to make sure that people can actually understand the data from those disciplines that I described before, that we are trying to combine in one software solution, which is psychology and AI.
Yeah. Okay. And then, I would love to try it. Like if we do our next phase of interviewing and hiring, it would be a lot of fun to sort of test everybody's assumptions and, you know, see if what they said actually matched to what the results you guys could show. So for the people that listen to us, it's mainly obviously like hiring folks, people who work in technology or hiring at the more senior end. How could your product help coach, let's say, for example, an executive team want to start using your product to help coach people in that team? How does the product work then?
So we have the core is the same. So we are using still video simulations, but we can give also back like very fine granulated feedback. And if you want to coach people, the beauty is that we can, all the things that I said before, where we focus on, they can be also described on a more retraceable behavior level. So you could use it, for example, for people in leadership positions when they want to train on giving a motivational speech to their employees, for example. And here the same thing is coming into play in a way that we are looking on the perception that you bring across. So there might be also people who say, I'm very like good at giving those speeches. And then, you know, we could say, okay, then let's go like through the video simulation and record yourself. And then we can give back like those detailed information on what kind of words have you used? Have those words that you have been used actually been kind of lively in a way that you convey this, what you want to say in a way that it's motivational? Or did you try to convey positive feeling through, for example, your face? And I'm very careful now here on the words that we're using, because it's also this kind of thing about the emotion that you convey through facial expressions. So that's the thing. We still don't care if you're really happy in that situation, because no one cares from your employees either. It's
the question just, if you just want to see it.
Yeah. It's like you have to convey it in a way and smile and deliver that message in a way that it's perceived as if you would be also motivational, or vice versa. If you are very emotional and you're not showing it, then it's also like evaporating, because you might sound or look like a very sober thing, and then you could have the best intentions out there, but you're just not bringing it across, and then it all doesn't matter in the end.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I think so basically, if we said, right, executives seem too distant, too cold, too clinical, mm-hmm. too closed off, then their team around them might say, look, you need some coaching to seem more engaging, connect, like easier to connect with, more authentic. I mean, authentic is an interesting word, because if someone's authentically closed off and a bit of an a-hole, that's what they are. But we're trying to say that we are trying to work on the cues, that the social cues that people want to analyze internally and feel good about. So for an executive that needs to have a better presence or connect with their audience better, they could use your technology to get drop like real-time feedback, more scientific feedback. And would that help? What's the next step? How does that help? Like, is it like they replay it back and it shows where they, like what they did mm-hmm. that brought their scoring down or showed them in a certain way?
Yeah, for instance, so that's possible. So we highlight things that we notice on the way, like where have been peaks, for example, like, this way you have been, for example, like, you looked very friendly, or you looked very grumpy in a way.
Okay.
other aspects would be in the transcript that we highlight words. You know, those are the words you mentioned and they have been good, or like maybe, or they have been none of them. And the good thing is, again, we can put that and we can give that feedback tailored to certain situations. Because in some situations, if it's like a negotiation, it might make sense to be a little bit more grumpy or look like more grumpy so that you get your offer through. So the good thing is we can tailor it again for those situations, and then people can train. And it's interesting, as you said, with authenticity that, for example, if you take the German chancellor right now, I think he's very authentic in a way because he's consistent in the way he's communicating. It's not just very
right.
good.
So it's not fake.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true, right? It's like, there's people, I think like people don't care. People want consistency. So if you're a little bit miserable, dry, or not the most enthusiastic all the time, once people know that's you, that they're okay with that.
Yeah.
But like the spikes in enthusiasm, and happiness, sadness, stress, not stress. Like, I think that's where people don't value leadership, when they're erratic. Okay, we're coming up on time, so I want to just be respectful of that. Let's say, apart from your product, what would you say to hiring teams or anybody that's interviewing right now for somebody? What do you think they should do to make their hiring more objective?
Yeah, one thing you hear very often is structure, and to have it structured and not just about the process itself, but also the questions you're asking. And then also, if you look at the questions you're asking, what we are doing a lot is about expectations. As I said before, you try to convince someone, like someone else has like they see your ad, you have a certain picture in your head of a candidate, or you think that person like should look like, and I mean, there could be stereotypes and so on. So that's again, very difficult. But you have that expectations about like, whom you want, whom you need for the job role, and you're publishing your ad out there and then hoping that someone else who has the same image is applying, but you don't know if the image is true. So what you do, what you probably also do in sales, is like having a discovery. And what we ask a lot about are expectations. Like, what do you think the job role would look like? You know, what do you think working, I mean, that's very maybe unique to a startup, but I'm always asking the question, what do you think like working in a startup looks like? So just to get the expectations right, because in the end, you might think, oh, the person has the same image in their head of the job than I have. And then they're coming and starting at the company, and then it's totally different. And then you gain nothing out of that. So it's structure and expectation management. And that's something similar also to sales as expectation management. And those would be maybe the first advice I would give. And really think about what be aware or like be conscious about what is maybe the real culture by maybe doing a survey internally. Again, it's a self-report, should be a good data point at least. And then thinking about the role, as said, not from a functional perspective, but more like trying to cluster it along existing taxonomies, which is already a good help to think about, okay, what will the role really look like later on? I think this would be my first advice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question to ask. And I don't think many people ask it. You know, I think everybody tells the person what the role is and they sell. And then you probably get the person tailoring their answers to you because they want that job. Whereas if you said, right, tell me what you think you're going to be doing every day and how would you do this and how would that impact your first 30 days or your first 3 months? And yeah, I think that is a more effective way of making sure people understand the job, but you also know what they're expected, and could be very wrong, right? It could be like, no, actually you won't be having much support, or you won't be working with the team too much.
I mean, the lack of information, how it really looks like, but at least it gives a sense of what the expectations are, like giving on what they read in the job role. It doesn't have to be right, but it's like, okay, this is maybe, that's already a good glimpse on understanding how people think. And what they also expect. And I also ask the question, like, what do you expect from a company? So it's always good to understand also what they expect on different levels, right? Like from the job role, from the company, and so on. And that gives you already a good picture about, their thinking style and if they actually deciphered your job in the right way.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Let's do some very quick wrap-up questions. So you guys are hiring at the moment, right? So what tools do you guys use that make your hiring more straightforward?
we have, of course, our technology in place. And then later on, from a tech stack perspective, we are using one of the awesome Munich-based companies called Personio, but that's more like later on for onboarding. On the first side for screening, hiring, we have Greenhouse and our technology. And that's already very helpful to have like a first set of technology in place for a company of our size, I would say.
Yeah, sounds good. It's probably more advanced than some of the bigger ones that we deal with here, so that's good. And if there's one thing you could do to solve or go towards solving the hiring problem, what would it be? What would be the one thing you would change or add to make hiring smarter or better?
I think maybe having also a better understanding what would suit me in a way, like to say, okay, what could be actually like a really good job or like a really good company for my needs in a way. So I think that would help a lot in a way, that kind of understanding, okay, what does it really feel like working at that company? And I know it's pretty hard because you would have to be very transparent and on so many sides, which is doable in a way. So it's not about the feasibility here, but it's really that people also get more conscious about, okay, is it really the right fit for me and so on. And then you would have to give something back for them actually that they know about it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the only thing you could change.
Yeah, I think in a way you've described what we're trying to build, which we're in the early phases of doing, but there's an element of dating, design and experience, but it's how quickly can you get to a very appropriate set of choices that suit your preferences, both your style, the outcomes you want, the rewards, the journey, the cultural alignment, the mission, where you don't have to spend hours, weeks and months managing all the applications, right? So it's kind of like this matching layer is what we're trying to build. But yeah, I think you're spot on. I think for like young people, it's super interesting. Like the technology will get there. The internet's just made everything too noisy and there's too many choices now. So it's like, how do you build pockets of choice?
And I mean, I think that what is also underlying beneath is that the names for companies you have worked at is maybe not sufficient enough, right? But most people apply for those big names and think, oh, that's where I have to go, because it looks good as my resume and so on. If you go to Google, maybe you would earn a little bit more. But also in startups, I would say they don't pay that less. So it's a kind of being attracted by those. And if it's just about the brand itself and not the salary, I think there are like a lot of different other companies that might be better suited just because of the brand. So and I think this, having an overview of what would be actually also kind of considerable for me, I haven't really thought about. I think that's really depending on my interests, my hobbies, I don't know who I am or like who I think I am or like what other technologies would give me as a recommendation. And matching that with like, yeah, company like requirement or like company's cultures and so on. I think this could be a good way to speed up those alignments. And in the end, both sides would win, I think, because then you get those who might fit in for you and you get to something that is also attractive for you.
I agree. I think, having people, I mean, we could obviously talk for hours, but we didn't go too much into like the extended version of like motivation and that part of behavior. And it's very obvious that you do your best work when you care most about what you're working on, and it aligns to your strengths. So if like it's your strength, but you don't care about the work, then you don't bring out the most effort. If you really care about the mission or the product or the field of study, and it suits your strengths, so you get this optimal performance and that kind of in the zone type state. Cool. Just very quickly, because I think we didn't go into this earlier, so what stage company are you guys at the moment?
Yeah, so we are traditionally, I would say we are close to an A round.
Cool. Mostly German clients or European clients? I know you mentioned some in the US.
It's mixed, yeah. We have US clients. We have also clients in Europe, which are like very large enterprise clients, and they have their subsidiaries across the world, US, UK, Middle East. So technology is used worldwide if you want, and can be also used worldwide.
Perfect. I think it's really interesting. I wish more of our clients used it because it probably make our job a lot more straightforward because there would actually be some uniform answers and feedback and assessments. But yeah, good luck. It's been really interesting to talk to you. Thank you very much, Christoph.
Yeah, thanks too.